And now it's time for your daily pet talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. And you know what time it is. It's a little after 9 on a Tuesday, and it's time for The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. Good morning,
hey,
Mike.
Meg, good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I didn't sleep well last night, speaking of rain and thunder and lightning.
I thought the lightning was in my backyard.
Me too. It felt like it was hitting every tree in my neighborhood.
It was just amazing yesterday. I had a friend, I talked to him this morning about some other business, said that he had 4 inches of rain in East Pensacola Heights.
Right. Well, I'm over there on that side of town, too, and it was really coming down.
It was pouring, and it wouldn't stop.
No, I know.
Then last night, we had it again.
Yeah. Yeah, late in the middle of the night, woke me up.
Oh, me too.
I like thunder when it's distant, but what bothers me is when you hear that crackle, but there's no space between the crackle and the thunder. That means it's a strike and you're maybe the tree right next to your house.
Oh, yeah. It's a little bit like Neil Sedaka here on our song here. I enjoy it. I like the rain.
Yeah, when it's just raining.
When it's raining. Lightning, no thanks.
No
you.
Thanks. Yeah, then I'm into the flashbacks of tropical storms and everything else.
Oh,
so no
goodness.
Thank you.
Oh,
but yeah,
but
it was
the rain is good.
Okay, from a garden perspective.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, we have had intense heat. We all know that.
Yes.
And in many parts of our city and county, that's been coupled with some dryness. Mm-hmm. We were threatened with rain and thunderstorms, but didn't get them. So this sort of, for lack of a better word, I'm not sure this is horticulturally correct, it kind of made up.
Right.
For some of that lack of rain. Because as we know, here we are in August. And this morning, maybe if we have time on the show, we can talk a little bit about looking ahead to fall. And you say, yeah. wait a minute, Mike, that's a little premature. But, you know, we have 19 days until September.
Stop it.
And we get into September and October, we really do need to start talking about some of our fall gardening activities. So we're going to jump the gun if we can a little bit this morning and kind of look ahead as to what we need to do.
And if you've been pondering since last week over a question that you're just dying to ask Mike about your yard, your flowers, your plants, 850-437-1620, text it on it, and I know he'll do his best to answer it for you.
We'll do the best we can.
Yes.
The best we can. One thing we do need to do before we really get into the checklist for fall, if you will, is just remember we have got to keep our eyes on the tropics.
Yes, sir.
They're kind of heating up. Luckily, what they've had so far didn't even affect us, but that can change and probably will change to some extent, in the Gulf.
Right. Well, so, this is our season when you think about it, because June to November is the official season.
Yeah,
but for us, the biggest storms have come, wouldn't you say, in September, October,
that's
the window for us.
Absolutely. So, and I say you got 19 days until you get to September, and so there you go. But as gardeners, and we talked about this, I think, last week a little bit, some of the things you need to do, and I think one of the most important is to check your trees, if you will, looking around to see if you have any dead branches, branches that look very weak. And if you can get to them yourselves, obviously go ahead and cut them out, because that's what you don't need is, 70, 80 mile an hour winds blowing those dead limbs
and
around.
And they can be so destructive.
Or more. And, but if you have a large tree, and I don't think it's too late. Matter of fact, I know it's not. If you can get in touch with one of our great tree surgeons in Pensacola, and we have some good ones too.
Mm-hmm.
We really do, to come in and kind of do some pruning on your trees. I think I mentioned before, I've got this huge oak tree in my front yard, and I'm not very kind to it sometimes. I talk ugly to it when it starts dropping those leaves.
I can't believe it.
Oh, when they start dropping those leaves in the spring, it'll drive you crazy. But those big oak trees are labeled as a pretty good tree to have during tropical events. What you have to do, though, in my opinion, and I do it, the way I do it, is about every 2 years I get my favorite tree surgeon, and we thin it out a little bit. He's so good at it that you really can't tell by looking at the oak tree that it's been pruned.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always said this, and people say, Mike, that's a crazy thing to say. But when you get somebody up there to prune those really beautiful old oaks and other trees, they need a touch of the artist about it. They really
do. That's true.
They really do. You can just knock off and have a bunch of, just cut off those limbs in the middle. Mm-hmm. It's just not how to do it. But in any event, this guy does a nice job, because what you want to do is to get those that tree opened up. So when the winds come, it's not like a sail on a sailboat.
Right.
It catches the wind, and then you've got some problems. So
right.
Anyway, but every couple of years. But if you do have some smaller trees or even shrubs that have got these dead limbs that you know about, maybe it's time to get out there in the next week or so and do a little pruning on that. So
that's good advice.
That is really, really important. Also, of course, check out your generator. Be sure that works.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure your propane tanks for your gas grill are, maybe have two, because if you remember during Ivan,
it was a while,
a long time before we got electricity back, and that was
I remember
one of the only way to cook
and make sure you've got a fan.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Ivan, I'll never forget how hot and humid it was that week after the storm. Oh my gosh.
Unbelievable.
We didn't have power, no AC. It was miserable.
No question about it. And you know, one other thing we need to talk about and what to do for the fall, and even for events like we had last night. During the summer, I would wager, I know it happens to me, a lot of your mulch has washed away, and you may be left with a minimal amount of mulch in these flower beds, and maybe none. It may just be dirt. You really need to go ahead and mulch them and do it good right now. It really doesn't make any difference what you do, whether you use pine straw, cypress mulch, pine bark mulch, rocks.
Pebbles.
We can talk about that too. But seriously, pine straw, of course, is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to buy pine straw, buy fresh pine straw, nice, bright brown pine straw. Some of the pine straw you get in bales, when you open it up, it's not even fresh enough to put in your beds. So be very careful about the quality of pine straw you buy. Now, if you've got a friend, maybe a school in your neighborhood, a business that has a lot of area with a lot of pine trees, you can go rake it up yourselves. Rake up fresh pine straw and bring it home. That's always a good way to do it. A little bit of work.
And you're doing someone a favor, too.
Exactly. But the reason you want to mulch, of course, is if you have an abundance of rain and that dirt and whatever's in it washes into our stormwater system, gets into the gutters, gets into the stormwater, gets into the bay eventually. You don't want that. So that pine straw will hold the land, if you will. And quite frankly, it looks great. Put that pine straw in, and I always use the term kind of tuck it under so it has a nice edge to it.
Right.
And boy, it really, really looks nice. It'll freshen up your landscape when maybe some of your summer plants are about had a better day.
True.
But anyway, but mulching is really critical, I think, insofar as dealing with these tropical events and getting it done, getting it done and be ready for it.
Okay. This is great advice coming from Mike Wiggins, who's the host of The Garden Line right here on Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel. We're going to be back in just a couple minutes, but in the meantime, if you've got a comment or a question, just text it in at 850-437-1620. This is Pep Talk. We'll be right back. Good morning. This is the Garden Line on Pep Talk, talking with Mike Wiggins about all your gardening needs and tips. Got some folks texting in this morning, and you can too at 850-437-1620. Okay, we were talking about storms, Mike, and the fact that we had those really strong thunderstorms that came through Pensacola yesterday. And Bruce sent in this, which reminded me of something from when I was a kid. And he says, for every 5 seconds between the flash of lightning and the sound of the thunder, the lightning is approximately a mile away. Okay, so I heard my dad told me when I was a little kid that when you saw the lightning, start counting. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. And when you saw, heard the thunder.
That was the number of miles.
That was the number of miles away.
It was away. Yeah, my dad taught me.
Okay.
Same exact thing, except it was one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi.
Oh, that's funny. But, yeah, well, I think it's probably true. Yeah, probably close. I don't know. It seems to be pretty close.
That's interesting. The what our texter said.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same thing, but just to put it in a different way.
Exactly. No, exactly.
We're kind of counting the seconds with the Mississippis and the 1,000s or whatever.
So true. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for sending that in.
That's fun. Thank you very much.
All right, so we want to go on to some other questions?
Sure.
Okay,
sure,
so we had Mike. Let's see. I keep getting these brown rust spots on my fig tree, and no matter what I do, they just keep coming back. And we thought it might have been the same person from last week, but somebody else had sent this in last week. Same question.
Exactly. And that was my answer to that one was, don't worry about it, because it's a little fungus spot on there. And remember now, we always say if this discoloration, the spots are inside the leaf, in other words, not on the edge of the leaf, that's generally a little fungus spot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the fig tree, this is going to be real scientific.
Okay, take notes. Get the pens out.
It's just going to happen.
Oh.
It really is. That's what's, you know, you're going to get them, but pay no attention to them because, you know, as the picture shows, mm-hmm. there's smaller spots, especially in relation to the size of the leaf.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The leaves are big.
Oh, yeah. It's a great-looking tree. It looks very healthy, and I'm sure it produces a bunch. But point is, this is something you really can't do much about it. It's more cosmetic than it is a problem,
mm-hmm.
and I really would check that off my worry list. I don't think it's going to be a big deal. Now, if the whole leaves start turning yellow and start turning brown and are falling off or even staying on the fig tree and just getting brown and crinkly, then you may have a problem. But now I think you're okay.
Okay.
I really do.
Well, that's reassuring.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for sending that text in. Seems we have a theme here. We got another text of a similar note. It says, we have had a hedge of boxwood bushes since our house was built in 1953 that have always been healthy. Over the past few months, the bushes have been getting brown spots. Here we go again. A couple of bushes have died, which were brittle. A couple of bushes have died, which were brittle, and we were able to pull the trunk out of the ground to remove. We've cut the brown spots out. However, there are still some brown branches coming out. Is there something we should be doing? Thank you.
Well,
these are boxwood
bushes.
Boxwoods,
mm-hmm. Exactly. There's some varieties of boxwoods. There's an English boxwood that sometimes has a, in my opinion, kind of a longevity problem. It'll get a root fungus and will do just what is happening here. The plant is slowly deteriorating, and in some instances will die. I don't think there's much you can do about it except just to cover your bases on that. I would certainly spray them with a fungicide. You can buy a liquid fungicide very inexpensively at your local garden center, mix it with water, and go ahead and spray them and drench the roots with it. Not only the foliage, but the roots, and see if that doesn't help. Now, what you need to do is go ahead and do it right now. I'd repeat it again in 10 days, and if it rains, do it again, because you want that fungicide, all that, to go to work in dry weather. So that's the approach I would take. One other thing, when was the house built?
1953.
You know, sometimes, and this is maybe not be very scientific, but it's just my opinion, some plants just have a longevity problem.
That's a long time.
It is.
Since 1953.
It really is. And all kind of things can happen. But I'm going to take it back to the roots azaleas. You can get an azalea hedge in your yard, beautiful hedge of azaleas, and you'll have one right in the middle of the hedge do exactly what this boxwood is doing. It will just deteriorate, go downhill, and you have to pull it out. And of course, I'm not sure how to describe this, but so you've got this nice hedge with this big hole right in the middle of it where you had to pull that plant out. It looks like somebody's teeth, one of them got knocked out.
The front tooth.
Exactly. So that's just kind of what happens. And I would think 1953, it could easily just be a longevity problem. And finally, this root fungus has taken hold. But I would to try to save it, because I would imagine this boxwoods are in a straight line.
Right, right.
You know, a hedge. To try to save it, I would spray it with a fungicide for sure.
Okay, well, Paul with Blue Sky Landscaping, one of the friends of the show, just texted in, good morning. I'm coming in a little late, but I just heard the boxwood issue. He says, Yaupon, that's Yaupon.
Yes.
Yaupon holly is a fantastic replacement for boxwood. It is a native and bulletproof. Boxwood don't really like our environment here.
and I think...
So that's a good idea, too.
No, that is a good idea. And let me say, Paul is so right. I think if you had asked me, say, Mike, I'm going to landscape my house.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a list of plants that I should use that are really hardy. Number one on that list would probably be dwarf yaupon. Yaupon, the scientific name. Remember, we've talked about this.
Oh, here we go.
You remember this?
Yes.
Ilex vomitoria.
Yes.
Gross name.
One of my favorites.
But it is a relatively low growing. Now, I've got one on my side of my house, been there forever, that is almost, at least 4 feet high. But it is a great plant, full sun, low maintenance, just nothing really happens to it. But, of course, if you've got a hedge of boxwoods, sticking a dwarf yaupon right in the middle of that hedge might not be what you want to do. But if you've got to replace it, and if it's in a spot where you can replace it with one plant, the dwarf yaupon is great. Paul's absolutely right.
All right. Thank you so much for texting that in, Paul. This is Pep Talk, The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins, 850-437-1620. We'll do our best to get to all your questions right after the break. Good morning. This is The Garden Line on Pep Talk. Just a couple of minutes left in this half hour. And we got a question from our friend Lisa in Gulf Breeze. Hey, Lisa.
How you doing, Lisa? Good morning.
She says, question for Mike. We lost our citrus trees and want to plant something nice by our pool. What do you recommend?
Well, they're all kind of citrus trees, oranges, tangerines, that type of thing. Just a couple of them. There was an article one time that said the five best citrus trees to plant in the Northwest Florida area.
Oh, okay.
One is a Meyer lemon.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. A Persian lime. Some people plant a key lime. A Hamlin orange. That's a good one. Fig tree, probably not one they want that Lisa wants to plant by the pool. Or a grapefruit.
Right.
And if you're going to plant them in the ground, there's something you need to think about. And Lisa really brings up an interesting point. We talked about this, a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to plant a citrus tree in your yard, there's certain places where it will do better. You have to develop what the experts call a microclimate. But here's what you do. You put it where you have a wind block, okay? Plant on the south side of your house, away from the north wind. We'll come back to this.
Okay.
Because I appreciate Lisa bringing this up.
All right.
Because I've got a couple things I want to mention.
Okay. Well, we just ran out of time, but we will be back right after the news. So come back and find out more about how you can plant citrus trees in your yard. This is Pep Talk in the Garden Line. And like I said, we'll be back right after the news on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Got a question? 850-437-1620. Welcome. Welcome back to the Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. This is Pep Talk. If you've got a question for Mike on gardening or need a gardening tip or maybe have a comment, 850-437-1620. So we were talking right before the break, Mike, about Lisa's pool and Gulf Breeze and what she could plant around the pool.
two ways to take Lisa's question.
Correct.
Let's do the first one.
Okay.
That I interpreted her question to be. She wants to plant another citrus because she lost one.
Uh-huh.
And so we talked about a few things she could plant. But you need to do that microclimate. And the only reason I mention that is there's a whole list of things. And we'll go over that another day. But here's one deal that you need to think about if you're going to plant by the pool, a citrus especially. Because keep in mind, much of the citrus is cold sensitive. And the temperature where we get, well, you might have a little bit of damage or it's going to be sure death, is around 20 degrees. That's kind of a rule of thumb. But here's the deal about this microclimate by Lisa's pool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm just going to read one sentence here. Water releases a lot of heat at night. Plant near ponds or swimming pools.
Oh.
So if you've got a citrus tree, one that may be relatively sensitive to cold, planting by Lisa's swimming pool is the thing to do.
Oh, okay.
There's no question about it. Now, the other way to look at Lisa's question
is... Well, she sent in a text and said, not necessarily citrus trees.
Ah, that's where I was going
to
go.
Because I said to him at the break, I said, you might want to know some other alternatives.
Well, and there are millions, that's an exaggeration. There's so many options of plants that will take the full sun, because I feel sure Lisa's pool is in the full sun. And what's the one thing you don't want is a deciduous tree or plant right next to your pool.
Like an oak tree?
Well, an oak tree, yeah. Oak tree would probably be an exaggeration. But
leaves.
Crepe myrtle.
Oh, yeah.
Crepe myrtle. Because then you're going to be cleaning crepe myrtle leaves every fall out of your pool.
Mm-hmm.
I had one thing I like is ornamental grasses, like muley grass. If you remember, talked about it, the one with the purple plumes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of my swimming pool friends say it's wonderful by the pool when it's blooming, but when those plumes kind of had their better day, they blow very easily into your pool and make a huge mess. So, what plants to plant by your pool? If you want a low plant, that dwarf yaupon we talked about is wonderful. Some of your basic foundation shrubbery like ligustrum, Cliera japonica, iliagnus, you know, you can go down the list of plants that really enjoy the sun but do not lose their leaves in the winter. And you can, you know, make your choices out of that. We may need to kind of make a show on this sometime about which plants to plant in your landscape that are pretty year-round, enjoy the full sun, and don't lose their leaves. Because there are a lot of folks that have that very same requirement. So that's kind of the story. I think finding the plant you want, you can go do a walkthrough at a nursery and, you know, with the nurseryman and say, okay, here are my requirements.
Mm-hmm.
It's by the pool, doesn't drop its leaves, and fits my landscape. So that's kind of how I respond to that.
Okay. Thank you so much,
Lisa,
Mike.
Thanks for the question. That was very interesting.
Thanks, Lisa. Have a great day. This is Pep Talk with Meg and the Garden Line with our host, Mike Wiggins. We got another question for you, Mike,
that just came
in. This is from Johnny, and he says, I've been listening to your show for years, and thanks for making my household greener.
Oh, Johnny, thank you.
Yes, that's very sweet. I have a question about marigolds. I have 10 or more plants, and most of them are, 4, 5, or 6 feet tall, and not one bloom any since I planted them last year. They get plenty of sunlight, water, and fertilizer. What can I do?
You know, that is one of the hardest questions that we are asked on the Garden Line. Why doesn't my plant, XYZ, whatever, bloom? That's a hard one to say because he's right. He's done everything right. He's got it planted in the sun, plenty of water, a little bit of fertilizer. it's a great plant. It's a basic annual plant here in Pensacola. I don't know exactly why it's not blooming, because he's done everything right. So many people will plant marigolds, I don't know if you knew this, around their vegetable garden, because maybe this is an urban legend, I don't know, but the marigolds will inhibit nematodes, which are small little microscopic insects that attack vegetable plants.
Oh.
But the marigolds will do some level of protection. Whether that's totally true, I don't know, but that's what the folks have said over the years. I think I might start over next spring. Your marigolds are not going to make it through the winter unless they're protected somehow, unless you do protect them somehow. And I think I would start over, find me some nice, new, fresh marigolds, plant them, and I bet they'll do okay. One other thing, be careful if, and this is a big if, I don't know what's happened here, if anybody has used any weed killer anywhere close to these plants. Marigolds would be very sensitive to that. They should probably just keel over and die if you got some of that stuff on there. But it might have set them back a little bit if they just had mist, say a mist from them, some type of herbicide. That's a reach. I doubt if that's what has happened, but that too would have affected the blooming of those plants. So I think I would start over next spring. It's a great plant. I really, really like the dwarf yellow ones. Dwarf yellow marigolds.
Well, he's saying he's got them 4, 5, and 6 feet tall.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Those dwarf yellow ones are interesting. From a landscaping standpoint, some of the, I shouldn't say they're experts, some of the people who think they're experts will tell you, if you have a landscaping bed in front of your house and you like to plant annuals, you plant yellow marigolds, and what it does visually, it makes your house look closer to the street than it really is.
Oh, interesting.
That may be another urban legend, but it, you know, it's, you never know, because obviously so many of these plants are so important to your landscape. If it makes it do that, why not?
Right.
Exactly. So.
Okay.
Anyway, I wish I had a better answer for why they're not blooming, but I think I'd find me some new ones next year.
You know, it's interesting because it's not the first question we've had this year since winter about things not blooming.
Exactly.
Do you think, I mean, I know we've been joking about it, but do you think that extreme cold did something to our plants?
Oh,
that
man,
snow?
Meg, you're right onto something. Blame the snow.
I know it was just
Let's
a long time ago.
Snow,
but we're getting a lot of questions about this.
People have had plants
blooming for years and aren't blooming this year.
Exactly.
It's
and
weird.
Of course, sometimes a lot of plants that don't bloom is because it was incorrect pruning.
Oh.
Hydrangea is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Even azaleas are a good example. You go out and prune those azaleas in September and October, you're right. It's not going to have as many blooms as it would have had if you hadn't pruned it.
Mm-hmm.
Because those buds are set right now. They set this summer for the next year.
Right.
So it could be a matter of pruning. I don't think that's a factor on the marigolds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless he cut them back.
Right.
And that's why they're not blooming. But I don't believe that that's happened here. So that's
okay. Yeah, great.
Think about all those things.
Yeah. Sure. Well, thank you so much for sending in these texts.
Yes, thank you.
We've got more coming in. 850-437-1620. This is the Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. He is our expert on gardening and has all the answers almost to every question you have. So do call in. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with the Garden Line and Pep Talk. Welcome back to the Garden Line on Pep Talk. Mike Wiggins is our host, and he's answering your questions, 850-437-1620. Mike, we've got a comment here from another comment from Bruce. He says, I live in Santa Rosa County, just east of Gulf Breeze proper. I'm told that 2 tablespoons of Epsom salt and 1 gallon of water for each of my palm trees, including pygmy palms, will add magnesium nutrient to the otherwise sandy soil and prevent fronds from yellowing. That sounds like a good tip.
One of the basic requirements. I shouldn't say requirements, but needs of palms is magnesium sulfate.
Mm-hmm.
And so any way you can get that on the plant, most, if you go to the garden center and buy a palm fertilizer, you'll see generally in the fine print, It's magnesium sulfate. So he is right on target. That's exactly right. Are you going to not have any yellow fronds? Probably that's not going to happen. But it will make the plant greener and healthier. So I think you're right on.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for sending that in. If you've got a question or a comment for Mike, 850-437-1620. All right, Mike, so you were mentioning to me you wanted to look ahead a little bit today.
Well, yeah, we do want to look ahead. First of all, let's look what we talked about last week. This is not looking ahead that far, and that's fertilization of your St. Augustine, Zoysia, and Centipede.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sound like a broken record here, because we talked about that last week, but somebody who wasn't listening might want to know that believe it or not, the latter part of August and even into September is the time to put your fertilizer on your three grasses, because the winterizer fertilizer that you buy should have, and be sure that it does, it has, you know, all fertilizers have three numbers, 888, 1648, all that. The numbers on winterizer, the last of the three numbers needs to be the larger of the three numbers.
Okay.
Does that make any sense? Kinda.
Mm-hmm.
Kinda. Okay. And so the fertilizer I like is 10, 5, 14.
Okay.
14 being the bigger number. That's potash, and that is a element that is going to help the roots of your grass become stronger to make it through the winter so it comes back better in the spring. A lot of people wait, I think, a little too late. We'll wait into October, even November, to put winterizer on the grass. I think this early August, it's the first time you want to do it, but I'd say in September for sure, do put that winterizer on the lawn. Be careful, so careful when you buy it. You don't buy winterizer plus weed killer.
Oh, okay.
And so that's a...
Make a note of that.
It's the old weed and feed that we don't subscribe to here on the Garden Line.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to spray for those weeds probably twice. Latter part of September, usually first part of October, when we finally get a little cool, you can spray your what we call post-emergence herbicides on those broadleaf weeds, annual weeds that are still in your yard. Dollarweed is a good example. You can spray for that. But in November is a real important weed killer application of pre-emergence. You can do it liquid. It's a great way to do it. Spray it on. And then we're going to repeat that in February. That is going to keep future weeds from coming up. It's not perfect.
Right.
But it's what we do in Pensacola. So the winterizer fertilizer here is in the early fall, late summer, if you will. But that pre-emergence is in November. And then 90 days later, in February, you do it again. And that helps with the summer annual weeds coming up. Grassy weeds, for the most part.
So it's really understanding...
Broadleaf weeds, I should say.
Sounds like understanding the cycles.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, and Pensacola weather, you know, is a little weird.
So really? So yesterday, for example?
Exactly. Whew. So you may have to adjust.
Right.
But by the same token, it needs those. That's the general schedule we like to follow for that.
Is there much of a difference between the when you talk about pre-emergence and the fertilizers and all that? Is there a big difference between the brands? I mean, I'm new to this, so I'm trying to navigate. And I go in the store and I see 400 bags of all these different things. So, do you have advice for finding new at this?
Generally, the brand names that are carried in our garden centers and even in the big box stores,
right,
are satisfactory. One of my favorites is Fertilom.
Okay.
Fertilom is a company that's been around a long time, and they make a real good winterizer. We used to sell hundreds, not thousands of bags.
Oh, no kidding.
Fertilom winterizer.
How do you spell that?
Ferti-Lome.
Okay.
And also, this is probably more than you want to know, Meg. But
no, I need to know everything.
Fertilom also, under the Fertilom umbrella, makes a product called High Yield.
Uh-huh.
Totally different bag looking. You can't even tell that they belong to each other. But they have a real good line of sprays.
Oh, okay.
And one of their best is one that is kind of a substitute for Roundup called Killzall. That's the name says it all.
Right.
You know, you spray weeds and it, grassy weeds or broadleaf weeds, and it'll kill them, but won't sterilize the soil. Very similar to what Roundup does.
Right.
But it's a little less expensive.
Okay.
So not everybody carries it. So you have to ask for it. I would say Larry at Pensacola Seed and Garden, maybe Werner Turf, one of those two garden centers might have the Fertilone brand. It was one of my favorites.
Okay.
And you might try that. But there are many other brands out there that are good also. Just be sure the formula is right. And also look at the label on those fertilizers. Most of them will have it, but you want a lot of the minor elements, like magnesium we talked about, iron, those type of things. They're called minor elements because there's not a small amount of them.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, they're almost as important as the major elements.
Okay, great. Great questions. And thank you so much because I'm taking notes.
Yeah, there you go. Go for
it. If you've got a question, 850-437-1620, just a couple minutes left, but we'll be back with you with the Garden Line on Pep Talk in just a minute after the break. This is the Garden Line with Mike Wiggins on Pep Talk. Down to our final couple minutes. Got lots of texts rolling into them. I'm trying to get to them all, but if I don't get to you today, don't get angry. Just stick around and come back with us next week. So this one says, Mike, please respond to my text. It says, please respond via this text. I had to walk away from the radio. How do you get rid of the torpedo grass without killing everything else?
I'm going to walk away from the radio because I don't have much of a good answer for that. Torpedo grass is the worst. It is the worst. You start digging up torpedo grass.
Right.
And it's like digging up a bowl of spaghetti.
Oh, no.
Thousands of white roots. So hard to kill. You really need a kill like Roundup, for example, which is going to be... it's going to translocate the chemical that's going to go out and kill the roots and kill the torpedo grass. Now, I will tell you, I've had people use Roundup on torpedo grass, and it took a couple of applications because it's so strong.
Wow.
But there is no what in the business is called a selective weed killer. In other words, one that you could spray on your yard that will kill the torpedo grass but won't kill your St. Augustine or Zoysia grass.
What does it look like, torpedo grass?
Oh, it's got a stiff stem to it. Oh, let's say it's not too tall, maybe 6 to 8 inches tall, maybe not quite that tall. But it's got that root system that is so hard to kill.
So our friend Paul just texted in, torpedo grass thrives in moist areas. Consider reducing the irrigation when treating it. It is a beast, he says.
It is a beast. There's no doubt about it. I've tried over the years, we've tried all kind of strategies and even digging it up. That's the problem. That root system is so expansive and so strong that you leave a little piece in there and here it comes back.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try to get to a couple of these questions before we go. What is a good liquid pre-emergent?
I have over the years have used one called atrazine. Atrazine, you can buy it in, the high yield brand.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the one, the Fertilone?
Right.
And Fertilone brand. You might want to check into that because that's a good one. But once again, timing is everything. Also, read the instructions on that atrazine. Need to follow them. If you use too much, you can do damage.
Okay. Thank you so much for your text. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but stick around and we'll be back again at the same time next week right here on Pep Talk. And you can listen to this broadcast again on newsradio923.com. Click on Podcast Garden Line and you can hear every episode ever recorded, as well as this Saturday, a repeat broadcast at 9 o'clock.